Important or prominent goal of the gopis. In fact, we can say the only goal of the gopis. So that is the interpretation that Krishna Chakravarti gives. Of course, both are correct. Supreme Lord Krishna was the guru of the gopis because he gave instructions to them in the previous chapter about meditating on him and seeing him as being present in all elements, etc. So in that sense, he is guru. Guru, of course, means not only spiritual master, but any instructor. In fact, a teacher is called guru. Of course, because he's got an important position as a teacher. So Krishna gave instructions on jnana, yoga, so therefore he is called guru in that sense. Of course, in the other way, Krishna is guru for everybody because he is Jagat Guru. He is a teacher for the whole universe, or instructor for the whole universe, and he has recited Bhagavad Gita as his teachings. And of course, his teachings in many other places as well. So he's a guru for everyone as well. But here it says he is the guru of the gopis, particularly. So yes, he is the guru in the sense of giving them those instructions. In another sense, of course, he is guru because of his position in relation to the gopis. He is superior to them because he is the master and they are the servants. In another way, as all jivas are servants of the Supreme Lord. When the gopis approach Krishna, generally they do not see him so much as instructor or superior, but they simply see him as their lover. So that is why Vishnu Chakravarti takes this other meaning, that rather the gopis simply saw Krishna as the object of their life, the prominent goal of their life. Which is the, we can say, the feeling that one has in a relationship of prema. In relationships with other forms of the Lord, such as Vishnu, prema means there also that the Lord is the goal of one's life. But one also has an understanding and feeling of the Lord's greatness, or Aishwarya. So with Krishna that is a little different. The difference between Krishna and Vishnu worship is that the worshippers of Krishna minimize that Aishwarya aspect of the Lord. So therefore the idea of Krishna being superior, etc., is minimized among the Vrajavasis and particularly among the gopis. The idea of Krishna as being simply their only goal becomes prominent. This increases as prema develops. And of course, in nectar devotion, we have three types of bhakti described. We have sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And prema bhakti is the goal. But it's also explained there that actually, there and other places as well, that prema bhakti is like a beginning. And there are other stages even higher. So we have bhava, and prema, and sneha, and raga, and man, and anuraga, and mahabhava. So these are even more intense stages than prema. Prema we can take it as a general meaning, and also as one particular stage, the first stage of perfection, we can say, or the second stage. Bhava is some sort of perfection, and prema is perfection. And then beyond that, then we get higher and higher stages. Correspondingly, the different rasas and relationships also correspond to those levels. So, for instance, the dasya relationship generally is on the level of prema, whereas the sakya relationship of friendship goes up to sneha. And
The Vatsalya relationship goes out to Radha, and it's in persons like Yasoda and Nanda, it is continuously in Radha, which is stronger. And then when we get to the gopis, then we have Mana, Anuraga, and Mahabala, which are not displayed in the other rasas. But that doesn't mean that the gopis don't have the lower stages. Also, yes, they have all the stages. Sometimes they manifest prema, sometimes sneha, sometimes raga, anuraga, everything. So the example is given of the elements. We have five gross elements. We have ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And it's described in the Bhagavatam that the quality of ether is sound. And the quality of air is sound and touch. And the quality of fire is sound, touch, and form. And the quality of water is sound, touch, form, and taste. And the quality of earth is sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. So in other words, earth has five characteristics. And water has four, and air, fire has three, air has two, and ether has one. So we can say one sense the earth is most complete, because all five qualities of it. So that is compared to something like the relationship of the gopis and Mahabhava or even Anuraga. They have all of the previous things in them. Whereas the Siddhasi will have one element in it, and then Sakya would have two elements in it. So in this way, the devotees in the spiritual world, particularly in Vrindavan, and those rasas are categorized in terms of superiority, and the Madhurya rasa is put on the top because it includes all of the other previous elements, prema, sneha, raga, etc. So in that sense we can say it's superior. And what does that mean? Actually, it means the intensity of the love becomes stronger and stronger. So that in the gopis, the separation from Krishna becomes completely unbearable. More unbearable than any of the other devotees. And it becomes, of course, stronger and stronger as we go up through the different rasas until we get to the gopis. So that is the outstanding nature of the Madhurya rasa and the prema of the gopis. And therefore, they are glorified as the supreme devotees by Krishna, because of that, the intensity of their love and the inability of them to live without Krishna. So therefore it's very true when we say that Krishna is Guru Gati, or he is the prominent goal or the most important goal of the gopis. He actually is, they have nothing else to live for except Krishna. So that of course is the nature of intense love. In other words, we do have, even in the Western world, the stories, mundane stories, of course, about sacrifice for love and Romeo and Juliet and things like that. That exists in the spiritual world also in a very intense way with the love of the gopis for Krishna. They cannot exist without Krishna. And there are many expressions of that in their statements. So they are considered the ultimate devotees. That does not mean that the other devotees are inferior in any way, but this is just a classification for showing the intensity of love. Another example is given, of course, one example, of course, is given of sugar cane juice, it's sweet. And then we boil it down and we get kulur, which is jaggery, which is unrefined sugar, I guess we call that, raw sugar. And then if we refine that, then we'll get white sugar. And we refine that further and condense it, then we get raw candy. So So we get more and more sweetness as we condense and condense and condense. So that is the nature of the different types of love, also more and more condensed. Another way of explaining it in, I think, Madhura Padampani is that we compare them all to very sweet juices. So we have grape juice and orange juice and apple juice and whatever, different types of fruit juices. And then we have mango juice. So they all have a unique taste, you know, and people will prefer one to the other. But in general, people say mango juice is the best. So like that, we have all different flavors in rasa. At the same time, understand that one has some sort of superior quality to it in terms of sweetness, nourishment, etc., etc., etc. It has all the qualities in it at once. So, in the spiritual world, there is great variety, and in Krishna, that variety becomes more than any other in any other form. We see in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the whole purpose is to show that Krishna is unique, and then that uniqueness is shown through describing his lila in the 10th canto. Why is Krishna unique? And that uniqueness is designated by saying that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the complete form of God. Which doesn't mean that the others are incomplete, because how can God be incomplete? But it means that Krishna manifests all the qualities in full, whereas other forms, though they are complete, will not show those qualities because of their particular form and relationships with their devotees. They will not show all those qualities. But Krishna shows all the qualities, and he shows them all in a stronger manner than any other form. Therefore, he's called Swayam Bhagavan. So, there are some special qualities of Krishna. In the Nectar Devotion, there are 64 qualities mentioned for Krishna, 64 Vishnu, and 55 for Shiva, and 50 for the Jivas. And even the Jivas, they have 50 qualities maybe they can attain in their spiritual truth. But even then, it is bindu bindu, which means little minuscule amount of those 50 qualities in the Jivas compared to the avatars in Krishna. 50 only. And Krishna has more than Vishnu. He manifests more qualities than Vishnu. Four extra qualities. So, what are those four qualities? Those four qualities have to do with his sweetness, or his madhurya aspect. Madhurya here does not mean madhurya rasa, conjugal. It simply means very intimate in love. That is the madhurya aspect of these qualities. So, of course, one is that beautiful, sweet form of Krishna. Because it's only a small child as compared to an adult. And it is not regal or royal. It is a simple cowherd boy form. And he's very young, tender. His skin is so tender that when it touches a leaf, his skin gets bruised. There's a mark on his skin when a leaf touches it. They're very, very tender. So Krishna is that form is unique, a very unique form, which is very, very sweet and invokes love. The nature of Krishna's form is very strange because actually he has three forms. He has his baby form, and then he has a little older called Poganda form when he's with the cowherd boys. Then he has the older from Kaishore when he's with the gopis. But actually even the Kaishore form is the most perfect because within that, even Mother Yasoda can be satisfied, even though she sees the young form, Bala form of Krishna. Still, even the Kaishore form, she sees that baby Krishna. And the cowherd boys, they see the Poganda Krishna, also in the Kaishore form. And then, of course, the gopis also, it's like the Kaishore form is something like the Madhurya Rasa, which has all the qualities of the previous rasas. So the same with the Kaishore form, it seems to have all the qualities of the previous rasas as well. So. All the different devotees can appreciate Krishna in his Kaishara form. And so that form is very, very sweet for all the devotees. Naksha Madhurya Rupa. And he has different types of devotees. This is his uniqueness. He's surrounded by various types of devotees. And that is because Krishna is the embodiment of all rasas. But generally, the rasas are limited to a few of them in the other form. They don't show all the rasas completely. But Krishna shows them all the rasas completely, all the five primary rasas and all the seven secondary rasas reach perfection in the form of Krishna. So therefore, all these different types of devotees are there. We have devotees as servants, and devotees as friends, and devotees as parents, and devotees as lovers. They all exist with Krishna simultaneously in the same pastimes. So that is a unique feature of Krishna. So we have different types of devotees, and therefore we'll have all these rasas manifested fully in Krishna. All the rasas, from Shanta rasa to Madhurya rasa, plus all the seven secondary rasas will manifest in Krishna. Because all those devotees are there, all the different various devotees are there with him. So this is a remarkable feature of Krishna. So this takes place, whereas in other forms of the Lord, we will not find such a complete manifestation of rasas. For instance, Vishnu basically has dasya rasa, with the idea that he is God. So it is one rasa, and it also isn't sweet, it's not so intimate, because everyone recognizes Vishnu is God. And he has Madhurya rasa only with Lakshmi. Very few, or some other Shaktis also. And with Rama, we have parental rasa with his parents, and some of the elders. And we have some Sakya rasa with his brothers. But again, there's a prominence of Dasya rasa. And the very rasa only with Sita. With Krishna, there's a very rasa with billions of gopis. Plus he has Sakya rasa with billions of copper boys. And Dasya rasa with millions of copper boys also. And Vatsalya rasa, not limited to Yasoda and Nanda, but with billions of elder copper men and women as well. So he has variegated relationships there. And all of them are very, very sweet relationships. So this is one unique feature of Krishna. That's why I'm not one outstanding feature. Then, of course, he also has, because of the various types of devotees and various types of rasas manifested, then this very special lilas. So we'll have cowherd boy lilas, and we'll have servant lilas, and we'll have parental lila, like Damodar lila, with his parents, and then we'll have the conjugal pastime, like Ras lila, with the gopis. With all those types of lilas, which you will not find in the other forms of God also, because they don't display all the rasas, and all the types of devotees are not there. So this is another unique feature of Krishna. And what is the nature of those lilas, besides being variegated, is they are also very sweet. Very, very intimate. So therefore we will not find in the pastimes of other forms a Damodar Lila where Supreme Lord becomes tied up by ropes by his mother. It's not there. But it is there with Krishna. Krishna is controlled so much by his devotees that he even gets tied up by Mother Yasoda. So that is the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, intimacy of his pastimes. And of course, the fourth characteristic is Krishna plays the flute. So the flute is very special because when he plays that flute, all the inhabitants experience the highest type of prema. This was a very, very sweet prema when they hear that flute. So again, that is a unique quality of Krishna. He's playing that flute. So these are very special qualities of Krishna, which distinguish him from the other forms of God, and therefore he is called Swami Bhagavan. So there is a in the when Krishna went to Mathura. There's a description in the Bhagavatam when he enters into the arena of Kamsa and is about to fight the wrestlers. Then there's a nice description there. Everyone was looking at Krishna, but everyone saw Krishna differently. So the women of Mathura saw Krishna as stupid, the most beautiful person, and woke their conjugal love. And the wrestlers saw him as a thunderbolt. Kamsa saw him as death, so that's a fear rasa, vaya rasa. The cowherd boys were joking with Krishna, said, oh, Krishna, look, he's going to fight with us wrestlers, and he's going to kill him. We saw him kill all the demons from Vrindavan. So they were joking with Krishna. So that's hasya rasa. And also sakya rasa. And the cowherd men were thinking of Krishna, and the elders in the Mathura were thinking, oh, he's just a little boy, and those huge wrestlers, they're going to crush him. So they had parental rasa, and they also had karuna rasa, which means compassion, pity. And others expressed dasya rasa. They respected some of the highest kings, respected Krishna, were very reverential towards him. And some of the persons, sages, for instance, yogis, when they saw Krishna, they had shantarasa. Oh, he is, you know, the supreme paramatma of everybody. And some of the demonic persons said, oh, he's only a material person, a disgusting material person trying to cheat everybody. So that's vibhasarasa, disgust. So in this way, all of the secondary rasas and primary rasas were all manifested in one person simultaneously in different people because of different types of feelings for Krishna, relationships. So not only there we find that, but even in Vrindavan, we'll find when Krishna lifts up Govardhan Hill, that everybody sees Krishna differently. The gopis see him in one way, the cowherd boys see him in one way, the parents, the elders see him in one way, and he's not real. He can't hold up the hill, you got to help him hold up the hill. So the cowherd boys are joking with him, and the gopis are looking shyly at him, you know, out of love. And so all those relationships exist simultaneously in one form. So that is Krishna. So that is represented in the very first verse of the Nectar Devotion, where Krishna is called Akila Rasa Rupa Murti. He is the incarnate form, very form of all rasas. And therefore, if one realizes Krishna in pure bhakti and develops prema, then you get Bhakti Rasa Rupa Sindhu, and it's the ocean of nectar. You get that biggest ocean of bliss from experiencing Krishna because of all the these all rasas simultaneously. And that will not exist with any other form of God. And it only comes through pure bhakti, if one develops pure bhakti for Krishna. So therefore Krishna is unique. He has all the qualities of manifested in him. So to realize Krishna, worship Krishna, to first respect Krishna, to know, be familiar with Krishna, be attracted to Krishna, to perform bhakti towards Krishna, that is very unique. It's a very rare thing, actually, a very rare privilege. Because we get to realize the complete form of God, one of the highest bliss. So that is what Lord Chaitanya has given. He's called Mahavadanya, our most generous. Why? Because he actually gives Swami Bhagavan Krishna. And of course, he also reveals the highest rasa, which is like the mango juice, or like the sugar candy, whatever, with the completion of all intensity. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya is all merciful. And the other way he's all merciful also is because he makes it available very easily for all jivas, even the most fallen jivas, even the aparadis, through chanting the holy name. By his mercy, even the aparadis can begin to chant the holy name. And through chanting the name, which is the easiest process, then all the jivas can get up to the highest level. So in that way, he's the most merciful. So the Bhagavatam is there to reveal this nature of Krishna to everyone. And therefore, the gopis are glorified as the highest, the pinnacle of prema, or love of God. question.
So, like we chant every day, but not necessarily we chant the establishment, and we don't necessarily realize what it's going to give us. What can we really condition our desire to chant the Holy Name more intensely or more?
Well, there are several factors. One is the preliminary things. You do have to have genuine faith. If there's no faith in your chant, nothing really happens. That's why I say the qualification of bhakti is faith. So what is faith? Faith, you say, is like a conviction in the existence of the Lord. Where does that come from? If it's only in the mind, that is nothing, because that's material. So faith is the first trace of bhakti, and bhakti is spiritual. It's shakti. So it cannot reside in the mind alone. Its source must be spiritual, and its residence must be spiritual. Therefore, it has to sit in the atma. So the inclination of atma must have before the Supreme Lord. And that faith then is increased. And that means the attraction for the Lord will increase through the process of bhakti. So we have faith. And then we go through Narayana Vritti, Nishtha, Rukhya, Sakti, and Vasa. That means the attraction for the Supreme Lord is increasing. So in our case, we're trying mainly to focus on Krishna and develop an attraction for the form of Krishna and all Krishna's devotees. So we have the basic definition, anukulina Krishna, silana, cultivation of a relationship of love with Krishna, and with the attempt to please him without other desires. So that bhakti, shakti, has to be fixed in the soul. And then, in sadhana bhakti, we utilize our senses, like the eye and the hands and the feet, to express that feeling in the atma, that condition of the atma. So that's the definition of bhakti. So we execute our activities, chanting, etc., like that. Then we begin to develop. But if the faith isn't there at all, then it's just like external thing. So there has to be a connection between the atma and its faith and the actions we do. So when that connection is there, then it develops. Now there's a problem, because in the process of anarchana vritti, and when we're getting rid of all of the karmas and anarchas and desires and whatever, the possibility is there of obstacles in the form of aparadhas. So aparadhas is usually the biggest obstacle to advancement. The aparadhas more or less slow down the process, or make it stationary, even cancel it. So therefore, the aparadhas is very, very careful with the aparadhas. And then if one does, then one follows the processes, the different processes like hearing and chanting and remembering and archana, etc., then the process should work, as long as we avoid the aparadhas. And then when we go through those stages, and we go through Nishtha, Rukhya, Sakti, Vasa, Sakti. So the main point there is that we follow the process properly. And there has to be a connection between the faith or the expressed in the atma and our activities. When that is there, then the progress should be steady, as long as the aparadhas are avoided.
What's this aparadha?
Aparadha, the offenses. We recite the 10 offenses every morning. For those offenses. And of those, the Vaishnava aparadhas is the worst, are the most destructive. Because it is through the devotees that we advance by their mercy, and by offending them, then there is no chance of advancing.
Mother, chanting the holy name, how it purifies the heart?
Well, the holy name is non-different from Krishna, so Krishna is ultimately the most purifying of everything. But it's not actually purification, because purification alone is not enough. Even jnana purifies, and then one gets mukti. So if the holy name normally purifies, what it does is it produces bhakti. By exposure to Krishna and worshipping Krishna with devotion, one's bhakti increases. But that is better than purification. Purification is simply getting rid of your material desires and false ego. Yeah? So that yields liberation. So bhakti does that. It gets rid of your desires and ego. But the other point is, it goes the other way. It not only destroys things, it also creates or manifests bhakti. It doesn't create things, bhakti is eternal. But it manifests that bhakti within the ama. And how it does it is because of ultimately Krishna's mercy. Because of Krishna, that's all.
If different different people experience different levels, intensities of love for Krishna, and if bhakti is eternal, then life, are we as individuals, like, we have a limited amount of bhakti, we can, like, a limited amount we can love Krishna?
Of course, we can say in the spiritual world, we take the different rasas and different devotees there, but as I said, we're not going to say one is inferior or superior. We just say that one, and even with the avatars, that Krishna is better than this or better than that. In one sense, no, because they're all God. But Krishna manifests all the qualities, therefore we say he is complete. And it's not everybody is going to worship Krishna. Some worship Rama, some are Trimadeva, whatever, and we don't condemn them. But our preference is for Krishna, and theirs is for that, so that's a matter of taste. So in the same way, the devotees also, we classify them, so we put the gopis at the top. But that doesn't mean we're condemning everybody else, but we're simply classifying according to the intensity of the love in that particular, form. So when we're practicing in the material world, it is said that in the stage of bhava, then Krishna becomes so attracted to the devotee that the bhava from the nityasiddha devotees enters into the jiva, or appears in the jiva at that point of bhava, because bhakti itself is not a creation of anybody. We cannot create bhakti. So actually it comes from the spiritual world. It's eternal. It comes from the spiritual world. So that particular bhava, according to our sadhana, we develop a certain relationship. So therefore, the nityasiddha devotees somehow expand their bhava into us. And we, according to our type of worship we do, following after certain associates with Krishna or whatever, then we develop that, we get that bhava from them. And that manifests in us. So it's according to our, if I can say, our individual choices. Some people prefer this rasa, that rasa, whatever, just like grapefruit or grapefruit, whatever. So it's similar spiritually. So we can't say it's limiting in one sense, it's just a preference that people have. So even the nityasiddhas are different. We have Nanda and Yasoda. They cannot dream of being anything else but Nanda and Yasoda. And gopis cannot dream of being anything else. And friends cannot dream of being anything else also. And they don't think it's a limitation, because that's natural for them. They feel this is their perfection. So everything is perfect in the spiritual world, but from an analytical point of view, we can say that there's more intensity and comfortable relationship.
Maharaj, please tell us how you can Krishna consciousness and how you measure the robot.
I met devotees in Japan, actually. I met them on the street, actually, and that's how I first... I got a card once when I was in Canada, in Vancouver. I got a card that said Hare Krishna. I didn't know what it was. I looked at the mantra and I started chanting a little bit. I couldn't figure it out. And I lived in a temple there also. And then I went to Japan, and there I was walking in the street. And then I met some devotees there. And they were distributing that guided magazines in English. So I got a magazine. Then I began going to the temple. Must be smart. Then Prabhupada came to Japan. And I met Prabhupada there. And then he invited me to come to India with him. So I can be anywhere. Possibly if that becomes fixed in the later stages of, you know, when we go to Nishtaruchi Asakti, if it's very strong at that point, then they'll get a realization of Srimadeva and Bala, and then from that they develop prema for Srimadeva, then they go to Nrsimha Loka instead of Krishna Loka. That apparently, yes, that's what the Rupa Goswami explains in Bhagavad Gita, that all these avatar forms also have eternal forms in the spiritual world. So if you worship them here, then you worship them there also. So Brahma, the form, all these forms, even the Shaktivacharya, the Parasaram, also there, and Arvindini, Kumar, also there.
One more.
Servants like what is it, Rakaka and others, and the gopis like Sakis and Mandaris and Rani.
What
are the residents of Vrindavan?
What about
Well, of course, all the Acharyas fall in that line, so we have, you know, from the Goswamis for like Mandaris, so Mandari, etc., and their line after that, all down, we can say like that, but just all inclusive in one sense. They're Purna forms. Of course, there are a few other ones which are bordering on it. Like he has, what's it, Prabhava, and then Paralasta forms. And among those Paralasta, those like gradually manifesting more. So on the bottom we'll have Dattatreya and Mohini, the first group. Second group will have more powerful ones. And then third of Paralasta forms is Hayagriva and Kurma and a few others like that. And then we have Purna forms, that is Nrsimha, Rama, and Krishna. But of those, Krishna is considered to be the final form. Mahaprabhu is not mentioned there really, and it's not included because he's actually like Krishna, he's fine more than one Krishna, but as a devotee. And Balaram he puts, I think, in the Paralasta forms, I think mainly because he doesn't manifest too many powers in the particular Leela on earth. He doesn't manifest too much, so therefore, he doesn't
put those sorts when the Balaram manifests
the whole fixes in the career. Yeah, he also does, it's true. Maybe it's a little bit covered over. And we don't hear about it too much. Definitely stay. A little bit of the Bible can we see. He has, also has his own gopis, etc. And his form is like Krishna, except his wife. Yeah, very similar, actually. But I see that the Balaram there mentioned is not put in the highest category for some reason. He doesn't explain why, but he doesn't put it in the highest category. Maybe in the second category. Possibly. He doesn't explain that. Yeah, that's Do we have the form under Mahavishnu?
Yes, and what's the use of
It's not really far behind read or studied. There's not much of a discussion about that, you know, original form or whatever, what it is or like that. But as far as Mahavishnu is concerned, generally it appears that everyone is more or less in a sleeping state, and there's no real, it's not a liberated state as such, because when you come out, your karmas from your previous existence in the previous universe get attached to you again. So something like deep sleep, which deep sleep is also considered a completely peaceful state in which one is free from ahankar, etc. But then it comes back to you when you wake up again. So therefore it's not really a perfect state as such in Mahavishnu, though it is pure in the sense that when there's a suspension of all karmas and desires for a certain period of time, then it starts coming back again, and then your karmas attach to you and you enter into a new universe, and then when that's all over, then you go out again and all your subtle body dissolves and gross body dissolves, and you go back to the Mahavishnu again, then you come out again. That's not really, it's not really discussed like that. But when Bhakti Vinod explains, it's more or less like you're eternally situated there. There's no beginning, in other words. He doesn't put a beginning on it when suddenly you entered into Mahavishnu at a certain point.
So all the
Jivas
in Mahavishnu,
that once they take the devotional service, then they can get out and go to the spiritual world, and that's it, finished. So they are in the material world or in Mahavishnu until they get the mercy of devotees and Krishna, and then they can go to the spiritual world. And once they're there, then they don't return.